Good evening, I'm Barbara Glickstein. You're tuned into Health Styles, brought to you by the Center for Health, Media, and Policy at Hunter College. We're here every Thursday evening at 11 p.m., where you can listen to my co-host Diana Mason or me, Barbara Glickstein, about the latest in health and healthcare issues impacting people's lives, as well as around important social policy issues. My guest this evening is Kathleen Swanson. Kathleen Swanson is a registered nurse, currently a candidate for a Doctor of Nursing degree at the University of Minnesota. She's joining us this evening to speak about intimate partner violence, specifically emotional violence. Kathleen comes to us both as a professional registered nurse and someone who has personally experienced and is a survivor of emotional violence. Kathleen, thank you so much for joining me on Health Styles this evening.
Thank you, Barbara, and I really appreciate having this opportunity to talk about an issue that is too often hidden and not addressed in our society.
This is something that I continue to read and learn more from, particularly from you, Kathleen, as we've had an opportunity to meet each other in different settings professionally. And the concerns that you've expressed, I'd love for you to share with our community this evening about intimate partner violence and a term that perhaps has in the past been used more just in a global way of domestic violence, but specifically emotional violence and what it means. Why is this type of violence, which of course all violence we wish to stop, what is it about this insidious form of emotional or psychological violence that you particularly have issue with and want the community to understand?
Well, what I want people to be aware of is, as you said, this emotional abuse is so insidious. If someone gives you a black eye or they bat you across the head with a frying pan, those injuries are going to be pretty obvious. And we know from childhood that if someone puts a hand on you physically and hurts you, that's not acceptable. So that's more clear cut. But what is so difficult for someone who's experiencing emotional violence is there are no outward signs. There's nothing to put a Band-Aid on. You don't need any stitches. And often, very often, when you're being emotionally abused, right along with that, or as part of it, you're being told you're crazy. And so you begin to wonder, am I crazy? And your whole way of thinking becomes distorted because your reality becomes skewed because of what your abuser is telling you.
And Kathleen, I know you've been very strong and have had the courage and strength after being in a situation of emotional abuse. So you speak of this both personally and again, as I mentioned, as a registered professional nurse who has now committed a great deal of your focus in writing on this issue. When you say that you begin to feel crazy, is that both, can you talk a little bit more to that as how that starts to feel and then how that becomes a way of self-identifying and perhaps not being able to leave a situation?
Well, maybe I can just tell you a little bit about the characteristics of men who abuse. And I want to preface this by saying that men aren't the only ones who abuse emotionally. Women can also do this. But from the literature, it's clear that at this time, the majority of emotional abusers are men when we're talking about intimate partners. So if it works for you, I'll just go through a list of some of the characteristics.
Yes, of course.
Of these types of abusers. One thing is that they're very controlling, to the point that, for example, you might be on the telephone and your partner comes home and you just know you have this grip of fear in your heart. I need to get off the phone because if I don't get off the phone, he's going to be mad that I'm talking to my friend. The abuser is often going to try to control your contacts with friends. He's going to start making very derogatory comments, not just about one of your friends, but about your whole social circle, so that you start to think, well, you know, maybe they aren't such good friends. Another way that he can control is financially. I had the experience of being married to a very wealthy man, but when he would see the Target bill, he would fly into a rage. And I was, of course, buying household essentials. But what was really confusing to me was he was out buying cars like I was buying groceries. And so there was really this what we would call cognitive dissonance. Like, okay, we need to buy groceries. We don't need five cars. So it's very, very confusing. It just distorts your whole way of looking at the world, and they just are experts at twisting what reality is. And the lying is another form of just being so abusive, because over time, again, your confidence just erodes because you're not sure what is truth and what is reality. Another characteristic of abusers is that they are extremely entitled. They feel like they're special, that normal social norms don't apply to them, and they just love to have that freedom from being accountable for their actions. And so if you, as the abused person, start saying, you know, wait a minute, this isn't right, all of a sudden he turns that around, and now you're trying to control him, and you're nagging him, and he can find all kinds of terms to really put you down, put you in your place, and again, you're wondering, what just happened? You're not supposed to be angry with your abuser. He can be as angry as he wants, but if you're angry, that means you are bad, you are irrational, you are crazy. And so what happens over time is you do start to feel crazy because you can't make sense out of this. You can tend to become depressed. Oftentimes you walk around in an emotional fog because you're trying so hard to figure this out. Meanwhile, he's making you feel very, very responsible. This is all about you. You're crazy. You're a nag, and you hardly have the energy even to get up and respond to him because you are so downtrodden by the things that he's telling you. But you're also confused because out in the community, people think he's a great guy.
And of course, Kathleen, I'm sure that, and I that in every partner relationship where this kind of emotional violence is taking place, that a period of time is unique to each individual and to each relationship. But is there, given that this is a consistency and over a period of time, as you've become more isolated from the friends, for example, the example you gave about the beginning of distancing from friends, does this also happen with family? And so if you have siblings or parents who are not aware of this situation, what does it feel like to be either hide this or it's not considered to be an issue because on the outside, everyone sees him as the great guy, as you said?
It just adds to the confusion, Barbara, because he does. He looks like the golden boy. He is so nice and generous and thoughtful to other people. And there's definitely an element of shame that the victim feels because everyone else thinks he's this wonderful man. What's wrong with me that I don't feel that way about him? And it's just really hard to rectify that in your mind, to make sense out of it, because oh, you go out in the community and he's Mr. Wonderful and he's generous and he's doing this and he's so kind and he's going to the nursing home to feed the old man, you know, who has no children to take care of him. And yet, at home, he's an entirely different person. As far as the time factor, I think that's just really individual. But generally, these men tend to start out being just very courteous, very respectful, very charming. And that's really the danger, because they appear to have all these positive attributes. They court you, they buy you the flowers. But then slowly little things creep in. When he starts to feel more sure of your relationship, little things creep in where you think, well, that wasn't exactly how I saw it, or that doesn't seem true. But he denies what I'm saying, so it must be true. So I'd say the time frame for each experience is very individual based on the couple. But it generally doesn't start out as just this huge blast of nasty behavior. There's the courting, and then it slowly starts to creep in as he becomes more sure of you and more confident that he has you under his control.
And you've addressed a number of these symptoms or signs or living experiences. My guest this evening is Kathleen Swanson. She is a registered nurse, currently a candidate for a Doctor of Nursing degree at the University of Minnesota. Today on Health Styles, she's speaking to us about emotional violence in relationships. She is sharing some of her own personal experience as a survivor of emotional violence and some of the symptoms, or it's almost hard to call them symptoms, Kathleen. I think we should probably refer to them as lived experiences of those who either have been in or currently might be listening, who hear something that they're experiencing. So let's take a moment and we can come back to this. But to honor or to support those who might be listening, either who have grown up in an environment like this and have left it or are currently in that situation, what would you like to say to them?
I would like to say that it's important to believe in yourself. If you think you're being abused, find resources, and that can be at your public library. Go there and look for information on abuse. And Barbara, I do have a list of books that I found very helpful that I don't know if you can post on your website.
I certainly will do that. You can name them and then I'll post them on the Center for Health Media Policy website.
Patricia Evans has written, I believe, 5 books about verbal abuse. One book that I found extremely helpful for me is entitled Why Does He Do That? And that's written by Lundy Bancroft, and he's actually a therapist who has worked for many years with the male abusers. And he has great empathy for the victims of their abusers. And I might add that the prognosis for abusers is not good, even with extensive one-to-one and group therapy over a period of years. The prognosis is very poor. But I do think this is an excellent book for any person, male or female, who suspects they might be being abused. There's another website, and this is more particular for women who are dealing with psychopaths, and the author is Sandra Brown, and she's written a book entitled Women Who Love Psychopaths. And I'll just tell you in my own experience that I didn't know what was going on, and somehow I accidentally stumbled across a book by Patricia Evans. I'd never heard of emotional abuse. And I read that book, and I remember going through it with a highlighter. And it was like an incredible feeling of relief that I'm not crazy. Someone out there has written a book about this because they've investigated it, they believe it, and this is real. So I just encourage any woman or man who suspects they're being verbally abused, take the time, take the initiative, go out and find resources. Not only at your library, but there are plenty of resources on the internet. Most, even small cities, have hotlines where people can call and they can ask questions. Does this sound like abuse to you? And then, of course, throughout the country, there are women's shelters. But you have to take the first step because more than likely someone isn't going to come up to you and say, you look really, really sad. Are you being abused? So seek out those references and believe in yourself, even if it takes your last ounce of strength. Go out there and look for the material that's available.
You had an article published in the Voice of Ambulatory Care Nursing, their viewpoint recently, and you talk as a health professional, and again, it's specifically around directed towards those in ambulatory care, probably directed towards nurses, on if someone either calls a hotline or calls for an appointment or is in touch with you, and your title of the article is Your Caller May Be a Victim, Intimate Partner Violence, Hidden Facts. So we do have a listening community of healthcare providers and nurses. What would you advise them on this issue, Kathleen, as you've taken this on as your professional work and focus right now?
Well, I would say when you are meeting people, don't go in with preconceived ideas because emotional abuse isn't just, for example, a lower socioeconomic issue. emotional abuse happens across the continuum. So in the clinics around here, people are asked when they go in, they're always asked in the clinic, do you feel safe at home? Well, I'm not sure really how many women are going to say, or how many victims of domestic violence are going to say, because they're asked this right along with their blood pressure, do you feel safe at home? If you have someone who says yes, you obviously need to follow up on it. But if someone says no, that doesn't mean that they're not a victim. And so watch for things like depression and anxiety. And we know there are many, many facets or many causes of depression and anxiety, but be aware that abuse can definitely be manifested in this way. If you have a couple in your office, watch for their dynamics. Are you asking the female patient the question, but the male is answering it for her? Is your female patient stating her feelings, her symptoms, and so on, even if it's a physical symptom, and the husband is denying her reality? No, it didn't hurt that bad. Or no, you don't feel that way. If he's downplaying what she's telling you, that should send a red flag up. If the husband or the perpetrator won't allow the victim to be alone with you, that's another signal, because it shows that he is so controlling that he wants to be there every step of the way, so he's in charge of what's going on. So it really just requires you to have your alertness, I guess, kicked up a notch to say, you know what, there's some dynamics here that just seem a little bit off. And obviously you don't want to jump to conclusions that are inaccurate, but you do want to have an awareness that this is out there, emotional abuse is out there, and it's a lot more prevalent than we think.
You mentioned earlier in terms of it also impacting the family, and this question of are you safe at home is one that I've understood now is being asked in pediatric and adolescent health centers. Mm-hmm. Again, is it the best question? Is it a starting point? Is it a beginning? I think we both can agree it is, but ending there or just having someone check yes or no does not make for good interviewing to see a bigger picture. What kinds of health manifestations do you begin to see in this kind of a abusive situation?
Well, typically you would see physical symptoms that would be akin to any physical symptoms from a stress. If it would be the stress of, you know, losing a loved one, stress of a financially desperate situation, it's well established in the literature that stress causes physical symptoms. So oftentimes with a woman who's abused or anyone who's being abused, you're going to see the physical symptoms, the abdominal pain, migraines, just kind of mysterious aches and pains all over the body. Depression is a huge issue with these women because they come to feel so very helpless and so self-doubting. So depression is a key, and then anxiety as well. Some other things that you might see would be like a hyperstartle reflex, because ultimately over a period of time, what happens with these women is they develop like a post-traumatic stress disorder, because they never know what's going to happen next. They spend their lives walking on eggshells, just always trying to do the right thing, always trying to make it better, hoping they can help and hoping they can fix the abuser, and it can't happen.
Kathleen, if you're comfortable, would you speak about your leaving this situation or having left this situation, your recovery, and to reach this point where you're now speaking publicly about it, mm-hmm. you're doing your studies on it, focusing on it, you're writing about it. So will you speak to that, what level of comfort you are, of course, in sharing it?
Well, I would be very happy to talk about it if I could help even one woman who's in this experience, because the crazy making is so incredible that I really, Barbara, can't even put it into words. But if you've recognized that you are being abused, really the the best choice is to get out, because the treatment success rate is so low for these people. And I think that women go through kind of a predictive course. I was very, very committed to my marriage. I believed marriage was for life. But in retrospect, as I look back and I was able to gain a little perspective, I realized that this abuse had essentially started from day one, from the day we got back from our honeymoon. And then we had children, and I knew something wasn't right. He was drinking. I knew that the our relationship wasn't right, but I kept trying because I was a nurse, and I was a helper, and I was going to fix it. And I thought, I need to stay for my children, because I knew at that point I did not love him. But I thought, I need to stay for my children. And then I realized, I need to leave for my children, because I could see the impact it was having on them emotionally and the strain that it was having on them. And so I left. And I left totally surreptitiously, because I was afraid of what would happen. So over a period of months, I moved a few key items to my parents. And then one day I packed up the girls and left and had the sheriff deliver divorce papers. And then very predictably, Barbara, this is what he did. He came on his knees. He was going to change. He was going to go to AA. He was going to get treatment. He was going to get therapy. And, of course, he told me I would totally fail without him. He threatened that he would get custody of the children, that he would leave me penniless. And then, of course, interspersed with all this was he was so nice. So you can see this strange cocktail of threats and enticements. And then he really prevailed upon my family. You know, we need to do this for the sake of the girls. We need to get back together. And so I did, not because I loved him, because I felt like I was doing the best thing for my children. And so I reconciled with him. And I will tell you that typically a woman leaves the abuser about 5 to 7 times before she leaves for good.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Because that the power that they have is so incredible. So I went back, and then I managed to hang on about 3 more years. And then it just became so glaringly obvious the impact this was having on my children that I knew I need to get out. So just be aware, if you're experiencing abuse and you try to leave, he will do everything he can to get you to stay. And those promises sound so good, and you want to make your marriage work, but it's really important to be realistic and say most abusers don't change. And that's not to say that some can't, but the majority of studies show that they can't truly change.
Well, I want to thank you for joining me on Health Styles this evening. Kathleen Swanson is a registered nurse. She's currently a candidate for a Doctor of Nursing degree at the University of Minnesota. She has been speaking to us about emotional violence in partner relationships, both as a professional registered nurse and someone who has personally is a survivor of this type of emotional abuse. Your ability to share both your personal and professional wisdom on this very difficult but important topic to get out there to the community as a serious public health epidemic around violence is deeply appreciated by me and as well as our listeners. Thank you so much, Kathleen Swanson, for joining me this evening on Health Styles.
Thank you, Barbara.